Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Hello and welcome back to the Believe Podcast. Tonight we are doing a very special live edition of an official podcast episode. And tonight I will be talking about the Dogman, essentially Dogman Down Under. Dogman is one of these fascinating elements of the cryptid world that has always piqued my interest. And especially over the last couple of years, I've been finding that more and more people have been contacting me in regards to having Dogman encounters, seeing Dogman, or believing that there is kind of like Dogman activity going on wherever they live. And the best person in Australia, I think, to kind of be... Not to say an authority, but maybe someone who has more of that type of, a collection of records, is Dean Harrison from Australian Yowie Research. And tonight I am joined by Dean, very good friend of the show. So, Dean, welcome back to the podcast, my friend.
Okay, and everybody.
It is excellent to have you here, mate. So, essentially, tonight we're going to kind of talk about how Dogman has kind of ingrained itself into, I guess, Australian crypto culture. And I'm going to trademark that word because that's a pretty good word.
Well, you know, is it a case of jumping on the coattails of American hype, or is it a case of an Australian Dogman per se, or is it just mistaken identity?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because like Australia hasn't got a huge, collection of animals that are bipedal that are in the Australian bush. You know, we've got kangaroos, we've got emus, and we've got yowies.
Right, and the Dogman phenomena used in that term really hasn't been used much in the olden days, but it's as I said before, it's more in today's society and with that American sort of terminology of Dogman. And I know it sort of came from the UK, and there's been a lot of reports from Europe. In fact, some of the first reports were 2,500 BC from Persia and Iraq and those sorts of areas. But more recent times, you've got America, say, in the 1500s, around Michigan, as most people know, Lake Michigan, And that's where it sort of started the culture for America. But for the UK and, say, Ireland, it was prior to then. And they did have wolves. Now, their wolves in the UK and Ireland, they had the same demise as the thylacine, the Tasmanian tiger. They were just hunted to extinction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's the same deal. I mean, the thylacine in Tasmania, they were attributed to killing all the sheep that the colonials brought out. And they really were. I mean, they're doing some massive damage out there in the farms. So, you know, they're offered X amount of dollars per pulse, and people did very well out of it, but the thylacine didn't. So basically, it was in the 1500s that the UK shot their last wolf, and the 1700s that the Irish did. So they haven't had any since those days.
That's rather interesting because, like, the English folklore is so rich with kind of like the werewolf mythology, and it really does continue through to even kind of today, because like England and essentially Europe as a whole is really rich in that kind of werewolf type folklore, and it even continues onto today where like people are constantly saying I'm seeing werewolves, I'm seeing, you know, dog man, I'm seeing this kind of huge creature that doesn't make sense. And you know, in the world of like Bigfoot, like how hard is it for people to go, well, yeah, Bigfoot exists, but like a dog man, like a bipedal humanoid creature that has got a canine head.
Right. So, I mean, and making things more difficult again is where I'm saying that, you know, the tide of popularity seems to turn with all these sorts of things. And there seems to be a bit of a cult following in all this mythology. So now we've got the dynamic in the UK and Ireland where you've got the Irish Bigfoot hunters and you've got the UK Bigfoot hunters, because now they've got Bigfoot sightings in the UK and Ireland, believe it or not. How that works, I don't know.
It's a very, very small area for all of this to exist. Like, the fact that there's... And not to say that I don't believe that there's Bigfoot happening over in the UK, but it is such a heavily populated small part of the world. It's difficult to kind of fathom that a creature like the Bigfoot would exist there and then potentially also coexisting in whatever small vicinity that they would have to, I don't know, let's say, live, have, like where their habitat would be to share that like with a dog man type creature.
Right. So, I mean, you're looking at a population, how many X times amount of what Australia has, and, you know, the UK is about the size of Victoria. And they don't have the vast wilderness and the Great Dividing Range and all that sort of jazz for these things to exist and thrive like we do. And America is the same. They basically got the same amount of territory and 320 million people. So it's a real strange one, but it's the fact that they followed that path as where the Americans have followed the werewolf path, and Australia's only really just getting into that sort of niche now, labelling things as, I guess you say werewolf, because I really truly believe that the whole werewolf and dogman thing, I think they're intertwined. I think there's some mistaken identity there. But particularly in America, I think that, particularly in Australia, that there's some mistaken identity between the two as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole, I think popular culture plays a massive, massive role in the dog man kind of phenomena. You know, especially like an American Werewolf in Paris and things like that. Movies like that kind of came out. And I'm absolutely going on the record that I am absolutely not a history buff when it comes to, you know, dog man record keeping, but I would almost guarantee that you would see a spike of dog man encounters.
Well, the thing is, with all the American TV shows that are going on, all these reality TV shows and, you know, the finding Bigfoot and hunting Bigfoot and all the rest of whatever, you know, it's starting to, a lot of American television gets ingrained into Australian society. We know this. But I remember when I was a kid during the 70s, my biggest fear was werewolves and vampires, you know. And I didn't really know much about them. I didn't know about the validity of them, but I knew that this was not a time to take a chance. We need to get that garlic on the windowsill now. And I couldn't quite find a silver bullet. I went through the silverware drawer, the top drawer, you know the one.
Yeah, with the silver melted spoons down the spoons.
And all that sort of thing. And that they really just scared the heck out of me. I did all that sort of thing. And I think when American Wealth in London came out in 1991, that didn't help. What about you? Did you have anything that you were scared of as a kid?
For me, and this is rather odd, but I had even to this day, like I have not an irrational fear, but there's like just something about the visual element of a grey alien. To me, it's just such an unsettling image, and it just never sits well with me. And I don't know why that is. I'm not going to go down like a rabbit hole of, oh, maybe you've had an experience with one, because I absolutely do not think that's the case. But yeah, just that kind of image of it was always rather like off-putting to me. I even remember way back in the day. Do you know the satire cartoon South Park?
Yeah,
I remember watching one of those episodes, and even in that they had like little grey aliens, and I even that I felt like, ooh.
So
you, doesn't sit well with me.
You're not afraid of being the undead then?
No, right. No, not at all. Not at all. Like the whole, like,
the whole, I guess, biting on the neck and being ripped apart.
Yeah, no, that's
fine. That sits well with
that's
you.
That's totally fine. Like for me, that would almost be like just a process of life. If you found yourself in that situation, that's your time. Yeah. But the communion type of book cover, never really sat well with me, and who knows what that is. You know, maybe there's like some deeper meaning, but for me, I'll never look into it.
I think I went through that stage as well with the aliens, and I think, again, you know, as a child, you're often influenced by what you see on television. Of course you are. And I remember back in the days of Amityville Horror, when that came out, that's probably one of the scariest movies in history at the time. And I think there was a babysitter that was left home with a couple of kids one night. This is in America, of course. And I think she went insane, or she killed herself or something. Something really strange happened that night. But, you know, that's what I'm saying, that, you know, those sorts of movies, I don't think it's very good for young kids. And I know that, you know, when my daughter was young, I wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, I think movie ratings have tremendously changed in the last 10 years, 20 years, because I know the movies that I was watching when I was 10 years old, completely not appropriate.
And have a look at what's out now, though.
Yeah, yeah.
All the blood and violence and stuff.
Well, those are kind of subgenres, you know, like that whole gore porn type of movies. Like, yeah, you've got those movies where people are basically just get pulled to bits and it's just blood everywhere, and that's kind of what that movie is about. But I feel like those horror movies of back yesteryear were completely different. They didn't have the VFX or the I guess that pure just carnage of what we do today. So things were scarier, and that's probably why they do leave those types of imprints on like individuals like you and me.
Right. Well, I think in tonight's show, I think what I'd like to do is basically put it out there as far as just some reasoning and some balance behind where we've come as far as the history of something that's very similar to the Yowie. That's been reported since the 1800s that could be mistaken. And also, I'd like to put it out to the audience to know what they think, you know, whether the audience thinks we have an Indigenous dogman within Australia. I mean, what do you think, audience? Do you think we have a dogman? Or do you think it might be mistaken identity?
I like that. Be sure to leave your comments in wherever you may be watching this, because we are actually broadcasting this. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, head on over to our YouTube page, because you'll find a video version of this. This podcast actually does exist as well. But yeah, please leave it in the comments where you sit with the dogman. Do you think it's real? Do you think it's not? Do you think it's something else, or do you think it may be that it's a sense of like Dean said, misidentification? But what I am truly curious about, Dean, is like these things ideas don't really kind of pop out of nowhere. And like we've kind of covered the sense that, you know, it could be like a popular culture type of thing where what we see on TV definitely influences us. The whole knock-on effect of Dogman being so prolific over in the States and over in Europe, that could also have a massive knock-on effect to how we would potentially perceive things. But what I do find rather fascinating is that, you know, you do have an extremely large archive of Yowie encounters, but not every kind of encounter in there is just dedicated to the Yowie. Like there's some that kind of, I would say, have a little asterisk potentially next to them to go, is this something else?
Right. Yeah. So there's sometimes, you know, there's a fringe element of stepping outside the box. Yes, it's the same, but different. So there'll be an element of it, but the element of this and most of these, we can draw the Dogman experience into.
Right. Right. So I'm interested because you have brought like a couple of little samples of I guess testimonies or audio and things like that, but also some written records from your archive. So where would you like to start? Do you want to? I'll let you kind of steer that ship there.
Sure. Okay. So basically, what I'm going to do is a for and against. So I'll lay out a few cases. I couldn't do them all. I mean, I'm pretty busy, but I've got quite a few here and some sound bites. And also, we had an interview with Tony Healy, author of Out of the Shadows, The Yowie, and The Yowie File. Just get his take on it because, of course, he's been doing that for a long, long time. So we'll do some fors and some against. So let's just go back into history where some of the first reports were mentioned in newspapers, for example, of these creatures that, you know, step a little bit outside the box and what we could possibly be looking at. So here we've got 1906. No, we can go back further than that. I can do better than that. Let's go back to 1849. This is one of the first. So Phillip Island, Victoria, 1859, Melbourne Morning Herald. So this article, this is just a synopsis, by the way. So basically everything that you're going to see on these is just a synopsis. They're just a bite of the entire article, but to the pertinent parts. So this article, several people observe a 6 to 7 foot half man, half baboon sitting by the lake. The creature reportedly sprang into the lake when it was shot at. Now, what we're looking at is something that looks like a baboon, but half man, and 6 to 7 feet tall. So, well, we can rule out a baboon to begin with because they're not that tall. Now, what we're saying as far as the baboon's concerned is when you look at a baboon, you are looking at an elongated snout, okay? So you've got a snout that like that could be interpreted as a dog if it dropped to all fours. It could be interpreted as a dog man if standing up, looking side on, etc. Now, if you've never seen a baboon before, but you have seen a dog, that's your closest port of call.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like there, 20 meters away, poorly lit, would be rather easy to kind of misidentify. And if you're in a high stress situation where you think you are seeing something that is out of the normal, the mind can really kind of trick you in a sense.
Particularly at nighttime and at a distance.
Exactly. So that there, I think even people looking on their screens now would easily confuse that for, you know, some type of a canine creature.
Well, you would. I mean, you've got the teeth, you've got the snout, and the sunken eyes. Yeah, absolutely. I can see how why that would happen. So from 1849, let's move on to 1881, towards closer to the end of the century. Golden Herald article. The Coomer Express relates that the Gingera hairy man has turned up again, or has again turned up. Now, this sentence in itself says something. It says they have a history of it, right? Seen again Saturday last week by Peter Thornburn and two others. First appearance of it was for quite some considerable time, etc. It has an appearance of a monkey or baboon and is somewhat larger than a man. Okay, so you go back to here, you go, all right, this 1849, let's bump it forward by almost 40 years, 30 years, and they're talking about the same sort of thing as one state away. And again, you're looking at the same sort of attributes. You're looking at the baboon-type features in the face, but probably standing upright. Now we go to 1889, towards the end of that decade, and in Bundanoon. So it's the same sort of area, and it's happening again, resembling that of a baboon. Large head, fully 9 feet in height, right? 9 feet tall, but it's got a baboon's head. Now, baboon's head, again, what we were looking at before, we were looking at this. That there, or that, etc. So you can see that that could possibly be a dog. Now, if you change the hair on that, which you will have on a Yowie, a lot of people express a dog-like fur on a Yowie, like a real full-on Yowie with the ape-like type face. It's got the dog type fur or the Yowie type fur, but with a baboon sort of nozzle. So you can see how that would fit to a dog man, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. And that one that was 9 feet tall.
9 feet. And like the other ones were 7 or 8 feet tall.
Makes you wonder what are they seeing? And you know, does it make you wonder if there's kind of I guess different versions or like kind of different species of the Yowie? Like, do you think that's a possibility?
Well, there are, definitely, without question, there are. And like I've said before many times, whatever was trapped here 7,000 years ago stayed here. They were land trapped. You know, sea levels rose and whatever was here stayed here. Now, through the lineage, there could be, from millions of years, species here and then new species come hundreds of thousands of years ago, but these ones are still here. And then these ones are here. So then you've got all those, and the sea levels rise, and all these are still here. All these relic hominids and hominins are all still here from different stages of time. You understand me?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really is. It's like this big melting pot of, like, different races, different DNAs, things like that. And that's when you can kind of find these obscure kind of looks being created.
From different times of history.
Yeah.
But they're here. So, all right, so what have we done so far? We've done three, I think. We've done three or four?
I think we've done three.
Done three, okay. So there's so far we've got three for a no. As far as I'm concerned, that's in the three vote. So the no vote, we've got three so far. We're going, okay, all of these are gigantic baboons, anywhere between 7 and 9 feet tall, standing on two legs. Next. 1891, Bathurst. Okay, so we've gone over the other side. We've gone to west of the Blue Mountains. This is Matt Hobby. First of all, what happens, the synopsis is that they're out, they're hiking or whatever, and that they found a print of a man's naked foot. Naked foot.
Gotta love the way the old school language worked.
I love it. Like when I look through all these archives that we've got there, the way they spoke back in that day, it's spectacular. I looked, and there before me stood an animal of the baboon species on the perpendicular cliffs. All right, so basically, again, but this time it's over the other side, so I'm going to say, okay, well, that's no, there's another one for baboon, and, you know, the same sort of muzzle, etc. Now we're back down to where we were before, and we've got, this is back in Goulburn. Okay, so this one's a little bit different. So now we're going to step it up a gear, and we're going to go bear. So this is Arthur Maron, who was quite well known in the area. He was a businessman, and he had quite a few people come look at this while he had it there in his warehouse. And they're saying that was 6 to 7 feet tall, but, you know, very much like a polar bear in the face. So, well, that doesn't really count either. So that was good. No. Then 1895, Moss Vale, supposed bear. Okay, now we've got two for bear now. So we've got bear. Down baboon. So bear's got two, baboon's got four so far. They're just saying it was hairy, etc., etc. They don't have a hide on this one.
It's interesting that they are referencing bear here in Australia? Because obviously, for any non-Australian listeners, bears are completely not native to Australia.
No.
At all. Like, they don't exist here at all.
Yeah. I'm presuming they may have had some in zoos, but not everyone would have the opportunity to see them. So I'd say probably picture books.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, back in those days. So moving on again, we are going to, this is called a newspaper called The Colonist. And they're talking about, oh, this is Mudgee, back over the same place as we were before at Piramal. And they've got the same resembling a baboon. Several people have encountered this animal. And it inspires the greatest dread. So, you know, the nameless dread we always talk about. And that's interesting that it does that, because that's what a yowie does.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's that, not to say it's a
that feeling
definitive that yowie trait, but
that,
it's that feeling something
you can't explain.
There.
Yeah, that just this, that sudden feeling that comes over you. So, all right, so we've got one more for baboon. So we're up to five for baboon now. And again, this is what I'm speculating. I'm speculating because I'm about 85% against the whole dogman thing, because I just think there's too much evidence to say I think they're mistaken for one of these. So, all right, 1906 now. A baboon terrorizes country people. Watch out, people. The Tangalooma tiger has at last found its rival and promises to eclipse the doings of that of the renowned beast. Out the Mudgee way, the country has been terrorized by the appearance of a strange animal resembling a baboon. It was first seen in the Piramal district, about 40 miles from Mudgee, and blah, 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 blah. And people have gone out there trying to get it. Okay, so one more for baboon, with those attributes that we showed before, with the muzzle, dog-looking muzzle, and possibly a dog-looking hair, because that's what how he often has. 06. All right, okay. Well, this one might be for the affirmative then, because he actually does mention dog. It appeared to be 8 feet tall, 3 foot broad, black in colour, covered in hair, making noise. Oh, okay, no, he mentions something like an... Oh, okay, I think he's probably referring to the way it yells or the noise it emanates. Gave several unearthly yells, something like of a native koala bear, and then made off, but you know, koalas aren't 8 foot tall. The head of the animal seemed to be shaped of that of a dog. First stood upright like a human being, two legs, 40 yards away. Okay. All right, so that's Mr. Clifford there. And so he's talking about the dog, but is he looking at the baboon-looking face?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, again, it could be complete misidentification. And there is something rather interesting that I do notice within the, I guess, the collection of these encounters that you've kind of selected here, is that they are all from, like, yesteryear, you know, about 100 to 150 years ago nearly. And I wonder if the way that they're explaining that is because they didn't have the vocabulary for it.
Well, or perhaps something to align it with.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, the gorilla wasn't even found when they were talking about
The silverback gorilla wasn't discovered until about 1920.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we're almost, I'm not saying like we're comparing like, you know, apples and oranges, but they're potentially...
They'll draw an analogy. They're the closest thing that they can...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So they're kind of... Well, perfect example is like when people see UFOs, and the first kind of UFO encounters that were ever really reported, they look like saucers. So that's how the name flying saucers came around. And it kind of just stuck around forever. But this here is very similar in that sense. Like, I wonder, baboon... They all knew what a baboon was back then. And that's kind of what fitted that mold. And it would be so interesting to almost have this time machine and kind of just reevaluate that type of encounter now and go, hey, this is what exists now. would you change how you recategorize?
Exactly
this?
Right. How fascinating. What a fascinating question. You're right on the money there. Yeah. Knowing what we know now and what we can show you, would you now change your description or your, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it really opens up this like massive, massive kettle of fish. And this is why I think it's so important that people like you are doing what you're doing. You know, you're categorizing everything. You're really getting every ounce of information because, you know, the reality is like we're dipping our toes into the world of what these cryptids are. And the fact that record keeping has been going on for, you know, maybe 100, 200 years,
This is it. I mean, the thing is, we don't know everything, so documenting everything helps us understand and learn about this subject so much more. I mean, if we didn't have this documentation, we wouldn't know what we know now.
Yeah, totally, totally. And with that type of thing, it would be so interesting to see like what the Yowie knowledge is in 100 years. In 150 years, in 200 years, you know, I wonder if that would really shine a light on the types of encounters that you've spoken to people about.
Well, I know that if it hasn't sort of been solved by then, they'll be looking at our records, the AYR records, because in 2014, the Australian National Library issued a license to me to relinquish all the AYR files to be preserved forever. So these files will be used for researchers for years, like 10 decades or maybe even hundreds of years from now. They will have all these resources at their hands,
yeah,
to be able to use. As where we didn't, we had to go dig all these up ourselves, but it's all there online for them.
Yeah, it really is quite excellent. And I think what it goes to show is like, if someone has had an encounter with something, like whether they may feel completely ridiculous coming forward to, say, someone like yourself who, you know, is why, you know, potentially an unbeliever, a non-believer of, you know, Dogman. But it is still so crucial to kind of get those types of encounters on the record because you just never know that this could be something. This could be something completely different from what we all think it is. It could be, you know, potentially a different type of Yowie that people are seeing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's absolutely no different to, capturing what we've done for what we've captured the last 250 years worth of documentation. It's no different. You know, we need to document everything, because in years to come, it's going to be useful. It's kind of like my files that I've got. I've got extensive files. They're all categorized behind the scenes, behind the website, and the amount of information I have amassed is incredible. It's like 30, 40,000 files sitting in there, and they're all categorized. So when something comes up, all I need to do is drop in a particular name, and then all these files come up from yesterday, the last 30 years or what, 20 years or whatever. All these people have written to me about little things. I say, well, I'm not quite sure if this is important or not, but... And now I've got all these coming up, and I can draw the comparisons to locations, size reference, description, all of that. So I can actually build a case on it. So it's just, yeah, having files is, I mean, for me, it's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it really does go to show, like, every little bit of information is genuinely a piece of, to this bigger puzzle.
Yeah, sure is. But my problem is that I just can't quite keep up with them all at the moment. So if anyone's written to me and I haven't been able to get back to them for a couple of months, well, bear with me, we will get there. Like I say, every report is important. So we'll just move on to the next one. So we're in 1906. So we're just, okay, same year, Singleton Argus. And what have we got here? Looks like we've got a baboon. So years ago, the tales about Yahoo or Bunyip that used to visit the lonely river reaches and scare some of the ancient inhabitants, well, I guess that means Aboriginals, out of their natural existence of time. Now, however, in place of the tiger, the Tangalooma tiger, there comes a story from Pimbara, again, same sort of area near Mudgee, and again, baboon. So now we seem to have a pattern happening there in that district. So we've got a pattern sort of like the southern tablelands of, not southern tablelands, but... probably around the Goulburn area, we've got quite a pattern of the baboon. And then on the western side, we're seeing a pattern of the baboon happening there as well. So This journo, he postulates that now this may have been a real baboon escaped from some menagerie. It may also be making a bit of a joke. Okay, so, all right, there's another one for baboon. So we're up to about 7 there. 1909, Richmond River. Now, this comes up again. Now, this is the same guy, right? So this is the same guy from 1906. His name's William Clifford. Now, 3 years apart, he has two different encounters. So what's he saying here? And again, okay, this is Tenterfield, so that's a little bit further west. Okay, a strange animal. So basically it's the same one that he saw before, which was pretty much a baboon. No, this is the head shaped like a dog. Okay, so this is the head shaped like a dog. So this is another dog one that we've got mentioned. But he also said back in the early report in 1906 that it also resembled a bear. So he's got right there that cross between dog and bear. You know what I mean? So there's that cross section of is it or isn't it? Is it more of this or is it more that? So this is where the confusion sort of kicks in, because his mind is trying to process it, what's going on. And I think the reason that he's going through this, the bear's got a snout, the dog's got a snout, so it's got to be one of those, but it's still standing 9 feet tall on 2 feet. But it's got to be one or the other because it's got a snout. And that's all it's going to come down to is the snout part.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is one of those things where this kind of gentleman, he'll be trying to fit this into the paradigm that he knows, you know, and that's really the case when anyone kind of has these encounters, because you kind of got to try to explain what's happened to you or, you know, what you've experienced before, so you can actually rationalize it.
Yeah, well, that's it. You rationalize it within yourself first before you can express it to anyone else. So, all right, so we've got another one of those, but that sort of falls in that half bear, half baboon sort of category. So, but it's still along the same lines as what I'm saying is mistaken identity, because he already has mistaken identity because he can't process it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just not falling under category A or category B for him.
All right, this is Dungay Creek. This is west of Kempsey. Now, this is a notorious place, a really notorious place for Yowie sightings. A lot of experience out through those districts, a lot of documentation, and there's a lot more that hasn't been documented. Believe me, there's a big story going on out there. This is the same sort of area where George Grey got attacked in 1965 when he was sleeping in his hut with his son. He's a logger working for a logging company at the time. And it's got a massive history, but this one, again, we're going down the bear line, aren't we? So it says it looked like it had a muzzle like a bear. Well, first of all, he says it looked more like a bear shape. And he's got a height on this. Yeah, 6 feet tall. Muzzle like a bear, in my reckoning, is at least 6 feet tall. It was solid. It had plenty of hair on it. It was fairly upright walking. It had a human shape. The muzzle was more like a bear than a monkey. So, you know, the monkey sort of primate sort of muzzle that they have when they, you know, quite often when people are describing a Yowie, they'll talk about like a slightly protruding sort of ape-like muzzle. But what he's saying, this is different. This is more like a dog-like muzzle, but it's 8 feet tall, six feet tall in this case, on two legs. So, again, what we said right in the early stages, if that was a little bit of a distance, a little bit dim in a tree line or something like that, chances are it's one of these and it's not a dog man.
It's interesting because I can imagine the listeners to this episode or this live stream are kind of wondering like where we sit in the world of like, does this thing exist? And I'm under the impression that people are believing they're seeing something that is like a dog man. Do I know a dog man exists? No.
How do they know what a dog man looks like other than it's like a dog-like snout?
Well, I guess in our day and age, it's popular culture. So people are seeing something that they think, hey, this looks like a werewolf. That's a dog man. And I think I could probably guarantee you, like if we pulled up any one of our listeners and kind of just said, hey, do you know what a dog man is? there would be a fairly basic understanding of, oh, yeah, that's like a werewolf-type creature. Oh,
I can turn my whole argument around on its ass by saying, what if what they're looking at is a dog man?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? It's got a snout, right?
Yeah.
And it's 8 feet tall. It has a snout. And they're saying it's kind of like a dog, but like a bear, but it could be a dog-looking thing, and it could have been here for all this time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's what's so important about what these records show, is that, like, it can really be taken up to interpretation, because the I guess one of the great things and the worst things when it comes to the paranormal or the cryptid world is that personal opinion plays such a huge role in perception. So if someone came to you with these types of records, you'd probably have a very different understanding of what this person potentially saw, whereas someone who was far more, say, layman in their view of or understanding of the paranormal or the cryptid world, they would go, that definitely sounds like a dog man.
Right, but I think the important part of a lot of this that we're showing from yesteryear is the fact that it's a primate, it's a baboon that's being reported, and they see the resemblance of a baboon, like, again, primate in it more than anything else. And there's no dog, there's no anything. They're just talking about a snout, they're talking about a baboon. They're not talking about a bear. They're saying, no, it was a baboon, but it was like 9 feet tall.
Yeah. And what is interesting to note is that, like, these people would 1,000% know what a dog looks like.
Yes.
You know, like, there is no way you would confuse. If you stood a dog next to a baboon, you would know the difference. And the fact that they are so prominent, like, so definitively landing on that baboon, I guess.
They were
classification.
Definitive on it. They didn't pull any punches. It was a baboon on two legs, but 8 feet tall. You know, it wasn't a dog. It wasn't a bear. It was a baboon. And they didn't have any lenience to either way, most of them. But, you know, every now and again you might get the bear stroke dog. But, again, I think you don't know what distance. A lot of them don't say what distance it was that they're looking at this. So, all right, let's move on to the next one. We're getting more up into the modern times in a minute. Oh, my gosh, look at this, another bear, Bungonia. So we're still in the same area. Same area as, say, you know, around the Goulburn sort of location-ish. So he's saying it saw a bear when returning from Goulburn. It was crouching down, looked about 4 feet tall. And then this woman says that she saw one about 2 months ago. So, you know, quite commonly seen around that area, the good old bears. So, all right, there's another one for bear.
I find it fascinating that there is genuinely so many bear encounters as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, most people wouldn't realise this. It's not until you do the research on the files when you drag all this information up. And if you didn't have this information, you didn't have these files, you wouldn't have the information. But he was saying black fur, big long teeth, and Bungonia is sort of one of those areas that has a bit of a history with all sorts of strange things. So, all right, so we'll put that one down as bear, 1964. 1978, so we're getting more to the modern times. And guess what, folks? We've got bear again. Now, this one's down on the southern coast of New South Wales, down in Naruma. Now, Naruma, Bateman's Bay, and right around there, geez, that was prolific with Yowie sightings. Bega, Mogo, really hit the headlines, particularly in the, well, probably the right in the early days, but also during the 70s. But I haven't put any of the Yowie reports in any of this. I'm just concentrating on whatever has a snout that's been reported since the first colony. So here we've got the bear again, Naruma. It said, well, it looks like a bear or a man in a bear suit. Well, I don't think anyone's going to be running around in a bear suit, so I don't think so. So I'll just put that down as bears. And then we get to this. So this was, this is the Gander bear. This took place on the 27th of February 2000. The photo was taken by Peter Raffles of Gander. Gander is in Queensland. Gander is north of Gympie, so it's above the Sunshine Coast. That's his friend Julian Knott. He's visible there in the foreground. Gary Opert put this photo under a strong magnifying glass, and he said it's definitely a bear, probably an American black bear, but possibly an ascetic. Ascetic? Is that how you pronounce it? black bear, and they're very fond of oranges. Now, these things, apparently there's been quite a few of these bears seen in that area at that time and in people's orange orchards. So I'll just zoom that in just a little bit. It's a little bit hard to see there, but you just see this right here, what I'm pointing at, that's a blade of grass that's blocking its head. Okay, it looks like a cow, sure. Some people could say, but, you know, there have been other reports of exactly the same thing. And people are seeing close quarters as well. And also remember back in 2000, or actually in 2004, only 25% of phones had cameras. What people were carrying around in the year 2000, including myself, was a camera. You didn't have one on your phone. So that was probably one of the only ones that we had, or the only photo that we had from back in the day. So here, again, we've got another bear. Now, you can tell what a bear looks like, and that, to me, looks... I mean, look how stocky it is.
Oh, that's clear as day. It's a bear. You know, it's got the really thick rear. You can see it's got the extremely large head. There's really nothing more left to say about that type of thing. And, you know, it really does kind of amaze me that this is Australia. Like, I cannot fathom that there is bears, potentially. Well, not even potentially. Like, this is photographic evidence that there is at least one bear out there in Australia at some point.
Well, apparently... there was a circus truck overturned, and I can't remember exactly what year it was. I think it was possibly the late 60s or 70s. And a lot of the circus animals escaped. And a lot were injured. They had to be shot, including an elephant. And the head of the elephant was put up in the local scout hall. But they had I'm not quite sure whether a couple of the orangutans actually escaped. And I think they had a few other ones escape as well, and that's sort of in the same area. Wow. And that is documented. So
You know, you hear these types of stories when it comes to like the panther, that you know, the circuses kind of let them loose or they kind of get out.
Yeah, but that doesn't account for well prior to World War II. We brought in panthers, etc. We found documentation that was well prior to World War II, because, you know, the cliche adage was they came here because they were mascots for the US and they were released towards the end of the war. But no, they were reported well prior to then. Back in the 1800s, we've got files on the Black Panthers. All right, so now we're getting up to modern times. Torrington. Uh-oh, got another bear. Torrington, New South Wales. Bears actually stepping out ahead now. It's out ahead of the baboon. 5'10", if anything, it was more like a black bear. There are some monkeys that have the same type of nose, I guess. It was dark brown, had hair all over it. The legs didn't have much shape to them. Like, there's no bends or there's no hair. It's fairly long all the way down. Okay, so then it dropped to all fours. Climb back up the bank. So now he's got between a bear and some sort of ape, some sort of snout. Okay, so again, this is what they're looking at. This is what they're drawing their analogies on. Basically, it's sort of like, and he says right down this bottom bit, he goes, you know, long snout. So long snout could also be contributed people are looking at this baboon. And calling it out as a baboon because of this long snout. They're going, well, yeah, it's kind of like primate-ish. This is what this guy's saying. But he's bringing bear into the equation. So, again, we've got a bear in there, and there's a bear in there. So this is just interesting because what we're drawing a picture here, right? This is what we're doing, and this is what data's all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a heads up, like for the people who are listening to the podcast, be sure to jump on, watch the video version of this, because we will be referencing like some people in the chat and things like that. But we might save some of those questions till a little bit later on towards the end of this podcast, because there's some heated people with like some very interesting opinions about the I guess maybe some of the evidence that you're portraying, and I think it's important that, you know, we got to take a very analytical look at what people say they encountered, because you're not the person saying that.
Oh no, I'm just going through the facts, man.
You're just the facts. You're just presenting the data you're sharing with us.
There's no point getting heated about anything. That's absolutely pointless. We're just telling a story here.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this information that's being presented does not take away from anyone's encounters.
Absolutely not. Like I said, this is why we need to document the whole dog man thing as well and get that all on record, so then we can draw a bigger picture from that.
Yeah.
Just like what we're doing now with, you know, the bear sightings and the baboon and what have you.
And the thing that's so important about tonight is that we want to take a historical look at what these types of encounters, you know, that were could have potentially been dog man, how they were reported in yesteryear.
What we're seeing here through all this data, all this analysis, all these files, what we aren't seeing is a dog man, right? That's what we're not seeing. That's the important part. Nobody's saying this was a dog on two legs. Not one person throughout all the history, all the documentation, this is the important part, not one of them have said that's a dog on two legs. But they have said baboon on two legs, a bear on two legs. And there's been a couple who said, well, I had sort of a dog sort of looking face.
And for me, like, those encounters saying that doesn't take away from, like, people I've interviewed who believe that they've seen Dogman or experienced Dogman.
No, it's not.
You know, like, very good friend of ours, Attila, has had his own personal experience with the Dogman, be it over in the UK, like it didn't happen in Australia. But the whole purpose of tonight is like we want to look at the historical evidence of like how did we get to our current climate of dogman encounters in Australia. And this is the journey of 150 years ago to today. So that whole identifying element of it is so crucial to find out how do we go from that time of, geez, what could this thing be? Maybe it is a giant weird baboon, to today going, well, no, we're a little bit clearer about what this potentially could have been. This could have been a dogman.
Or is it something completely different? But the point is that if the dogman, all these sightings from all these Yowie sightings, not referring to these, I'm all the Yowie sightings plus these, they've all been reported to newspapers, okay? But not one dogman report has been sent to a newspaper since the early 1800s saying it's a dogman. Not saying it had the big ears or anything like that, right? So that's what we're saying. If there was something like that, we would have it, but there's not.
Yeah. And again, it's opening the discussion. It's opening different points of view because you're a fool if you think you're always right.
Oh, well, what I always say, the more I learn, the less I know.
Exactly.
So I'm not saying I know it all, but I know what I do know, and there's no dogman reports, right up until just recent times. And the first ones come in here pretty much of 1985. This is Wurrungri, Queensland, Gold Coast. I interviewed this lady myself. And, very, very tall. It freaked the heck out of her. Now, we had a conversation after this, and because she was finding it really hard to, like we said, you know, try and put a picture to her description, but she did come up with one in the end. It was the Anubis, the Egyptian Anubis. So, but the thing that stands out on this, right, it's the size of the ears. She says that they were 20 to 30 centimetres sticking directly up.
Oh, wow. On
both sides of the head. It was tall with glowing green eyes, but the ears were sticking straight up. And this thing was about 7 feet tall. So this is and also there's a – around the same time, and this is interesting because we often find a lot of reports happen in the same period of time. And they might be – completely different, but they're all concentrated in the same area over, say, a 2-year period, which is, you know, really interesting stuff. So I've got a soundbite of Michaela here. And everyone just have a listen to this.
And in the distance, maybe 20 to 30 metres, somewhere like that, something really tall with ears straight up and glowing eyes. They were either green or red. To this day, I cannot recall. It was just glowing. But I remember being quite slim, tall, ears sticking up, and I just bolted, caught up to my friend Kim, grabbed her by the arm, started shaking her, going, oh, my God, it's got – and I was just repeating, it's got ears, it's got – glowing eyes, it's tall, and she's like, what, I don't want to know, I don't want to know. And I sort of stopped, I went home the long way, and she went home.
When you noticed it, what was it doing? What was your reaction?
It was basically just face on, but in a distance, and it was tall because it was in a distance and it was still tall, so I knew it had to be a lot taller. It was something that never in my wildest dreams was I expecting, so... You know, glowing eyes, it's got ears, and I just remember them being quite long and straight up. So in the silhouette, or, you know, because it was facing to me, I couldn't see if it had a snout or anything other than that. It was just the ears stood out, the tallness, and the eyes.
In your email here to me, you suggest that it was approximately 7 to 8 feet tall.
Yeah, I'd say it's quite tall.
When we were speaking earlier, I asked you, were they reflecting or self-illuminating?
Yeah, definitely were self. Well, it looked like it was self because there was nothing really reflecting. There was no car lights or anything like that. So blown away by it.
There was a distinct colour, but you can't remember which.
Yes, colour. I think it was a red, it was a green, but it was either one of them two. It was one of them two colours.
Was it a red or green? I hope you don't have that same problem when you're driving a car. Now, you mentioned that the ears stood straight up.
Yes.
How long were the ears and where were they situated on the head?
On top.
When you say on top, are you saying like a dog's ears would be placed on the side of the
Yeah, exactly.
The size of the ears?
Say 20 to 30 centimetres, I'd say.
Similar to the way a Doberman's ears would stick directly up.
Yep. But longer, lot longer. So put another 20 centimetres on his ear on top. Like, I remember being, you know, like, shake my friend's got ears, you know what I mean? Like, that was like a key point. Eyes and ears, they were my two things, and it was tall and...
Right, so that's where we leave that one. That was really interesting that the glowing red or green eyes, it sort of correlates with the next audio bite that I have, and he sort of describes the same attribute.
But before you jump into there, like, that woman was quite definitive. Like, she saw like a dog-like creature, and everything that she relayed to you, complete confidence in how she was speaking about it. Like, you could hear her in her voice, like, she's obviously come to terms with the thing that she encountered, and is quite sure of herself, like, not second guessing or anything. Like, obviously there was a little hiccup about the red or the green, but to be so sure about, like, even these, like, kind of outstanding elements of illuminated eyes.
Yeah.
Like, to be so sure about that. That's very telling.
Self-illuminating. But she said it was face on to her the whole time. Not sideways, so she couldn't tell whether it had a muzzle or not. But the most amazing thing is these ears that were just like the anubis, sticking up 20 to 30 centimetres, sort of like a Doberman's ears, as she explains it. But she also went on to say that there was a picture that she had seen that did sum it up. You know, strangely enough, it was on Scooby-Doo. But she said this cartoon character that they had during one of their episodes was just like what she saw. And I had a quick look through. I did my Scooby-Doo searches and episodes and things. In images in Google, I couldn't actually find what she's referring to. But then the second best thing she could come up with, because I sent her these, I said, is this what you're talking about? And she goes, yeah, that they're the ears.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and 7 feet tall.
Yeah, that's big. That's big. Did she say how far away she was from it?
Yeah, only about 30 metres.
Oh, wow, that's close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at that distance, like, you, she would have a pretty good understanding of, like, the actual size of things. Like, it's not, like, hundreds of metres away.
I know.
Distorted,
it was,
like,
it's close enough to get a good look at it, and she never walked that way again at night time.
Don't blame her.
Yeah. It was, afterwards, she was with her friend, and I think they were just out in the bush there, because that was back in the day when Wurundjeri was just putting new estates in. It was underdeveloped. There was a lot of bushland, and she said a really strange thing happened. Standing out there, it was just probably weeks after this event, and she said suddenly there was this big whoosh just comes through right past them, and they go, what the heck was that? It just came from nowhere. Just a whoosh went right round them and then gone. And in that same area, probably only 100 metres away, another woman, exactly the same time, she's with her friend, and they're walking along in the long grass again. This is sort of like, you know, the stages of new development and so on. So there's a bit of a wide open space there and long, long grass. And they'd been playing in the afternoon. They're heading back home, and they could see something was in the grass, and they're getting closer and closer. And as they came up and they looked over, there's this thing in the fetal position lying there looking up at them, looking scared. And that description she gave was kind of more like a young Yowie that was lying there in the grass. But she remembers that like it was yesterday.
Wow.
But again, these sort of things happen in the same area at the same time. They sort of had this concentration. Broken Hill was another great example. And that everything just went on there for a short spate of time within a 2-year window, and then bang, nothing again. And that's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
So we've gone past where our hour's gone already.
It's flown by. It's flown by.
Already?
Already. Jeez. How many more audio bits do we have here?
Okay, so audio, I've got one more, which is the dog man, which, you know, again, he says, he gives a pretty good, yeah. And then we've got Tony Healy, an interview with Tony Healy on, like, the dog man and so on.
Yeah. Well, let's go with one more, and then we might wrap up this first section of the discussion.
All right. Okay.
Let's do it.
All right, so backstory on this, I'll just bring up the report. Logan Village, where I am. I know you're right from it there. All right, so this came through to me. I gave it to Tony Healy. He's driving. Yeah, he's coming back from the Gold Coast, and he's driving down this back road. And I know the road well because I drive it many times. And it's kind of like farm fields and bush, etc. It's on the other side of the hill where the Ormo Yowie is. And, of course, you know, everyone knows everything about the Ormo Yowie. That was notorious. So it's all in the same space of bushland, basically, a few kilometres from each other. It's quite interesting how many people bring up the name Usain Bolt. I think if I did a search on my private files, I'd... okay, so this thing looked like a dog. He just passed it, and he's going, what the heck is that? It was about midnight-ish or so. And he's turned his car around, and he's come back, and it's still there. As he gets out, this thing stands up and looks at him, and I'll let him tell the story.
The second I turned the corner, I saw an animal. My brain tried to tell me it was a dog. And then, as my car leveled up to the spot where it was, I actually stopped because I couldn't convince myself it was a dog. It was about 7 foot tall. It was crouched like a human. So I kept on driving past. I got about 20, 30 metres past it in my car, and I had to have another look. So I turned around, drove back to the spot, and it was still there. It was foraging through one of the gutters next to the sign. There must have been some food or something in the actual ditch. So it was actually squatted down foraging like a human. And then I opened the car door, put my foot out, it stood up, looked at me, turned around, and legged it straight for the bush. The eyes were bright green. It was greyish-black hair. Like I say, it was crouched down like a human. That's why I thought it was a dog initially. Looked at me with piercing green eyes. 20 feet away from it. You know when to take off from the racetrack, that's what it did. The only way to describe it was like watching an electric sprinter get off the blocks. This thing clipped a street sign as it took off with its head. It's pretty tall.
The weight, the general build and shape of the thing?
Like pretty sort of tall and rangy and not, almost a little undernourished. The arms and legs were extremely thin, very, very stocky core. Muscular, but thin. But the head is what sort of really surprised me, because it had an elongated snout, much like a dog, which was my first impression. The same shape as my head. Basically, it was a slightly elongated snout down towards where the mouth is. The mouth and the snout were sort of protruding, but basically the same shape as a human head.
You wouldn't say it looked more like a dog than a human in the face.
The only reason I thought it was a dog is because I've always worked with animals. When I first turned the corner, my first thought was, oh yeah, it's a dog. But then when I pulled up next to it, it looked like an elongated snout, like a dog. I guess it was sort of, the bottom part of the face sort of protruded a bit. Completely hairy face, but the piercing green eyes. That was what really caught my attention.
That's interesting. How about the size of the eyes? Could you sort of tell? I mean, I guess they're reflecting green, but...
Bigger than ours. Definitely bigger than ours.
The hair on the face was just general, was it? All over? Or
exactly the same. Exactly the same as what was on the body. Fairly coarse looking. The only thing I can relate it to is an Irish wolfhound. They've got that real tufty, sort of sticky, outy fur. It was all over the face as well. There was a feral stench. I don't know if there was a dead animal in the ditch or something at the time, but that's what it smelled like, decomposing flesh.
Yeah, so there you go. I'll just show you the street post that he, this thing hit. This is it here. So that was the 70 zone street post that it hit.
Wow.
So I should have been a bit embarrassed after doing that. That's Tony Healy. No, we won't do that one just yet. That one on a little bit later.
Not yet. We'll play that in a minute. But that's a, you know what, that type of encounter where this thing is like running next to it is just kind of terrifying.
Oh no, yeah, we've got another one. Yeah. Now, this one here, the Woy Woy.
Oh, this is one of my favorite encounters.
Pablo.
This thing is nuts. And this is terrifying because not only is the artist recreation of this incredible, but the actual encounter is just so mind-blowing and genuinely just a terrifying experience from start to finish.
It was so hard to do an edit on this because he had so much to say. He was so descriptive about everything. First of all, his wife's driving, he's in the passenger seat, kids are in the back. And it's dark, and they've got the kangaroo mob in front of them, and they're sort of all splitting up, and she's like slowing down, trying not to hit them. And then he's got the kangaroo that comes out of the bush on the left hand side, and sort of running next to the car. He sort of does the double, triple take, and it's only about 1.5 meters from the side of the car, and he's looking straight at it, and this thing's just running as the picture depicts, as he's drawing.
Can you get that one up just on the big screen for those watching?
This is what. Oh.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's what he did, and then I think Buck sort of put his twinge on that. This is what he's talking about, was the muzzle,
yeah.
and he mentions dog all the way through. He doesn't back off from that, and also he mentions the ears.
I was going to say even the ears are like. They're human-like, but there's like a canine element to them.
Yeah. He goes right into that. But like I said, it was really hard to do an edit on it because he had so much to say and everything he was saying was relevant, but we don't sort of like have half an hour to sort of spend on it. So anyway, let's have a listen to that after we have a break.
Okay, that sounds great. So what we're going to do is we're gonna play a interview that you've got pre-recorded while we just kind of take a 5-10 minute break and while we freshen up and we will be back for round two. So in the meantime, guys, while we do that, it would be a really good opportunity if you have any questions for myself or Dean relating to, you know, Australian dogman encounters, or just questions about the dogman in general, pop them in the chat, because I'd love to pass them on to you and get your thoughts on them. And now a quick word from our sponsor.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
This is Tony Healy, and this is an interview that I did with him a couple of days
in ago. In our files, when I say our files, I mean you, myself and Paul, we have files from the 1800s with the first reports of an elongated snout. And so the question is, are people making a mistake between, you know, a snout of a primate and or a dog?
Yeah, well, I don't know, but certainly the vast majority of what we think of as Yowie reports were, you know, they fit the standard appearance of a Yowie, ape-like man or a man-like ape, bipedal, and usually they'd say the face was fairly flat, right? Broad nose, not much in the way of a snout. Some people would say, oh, in profile it may have had, you know, a bit of a muzzle. And then occasionally people would say, well, it did seem to have a dog-like snout. And over the years, with these sort of reports, this dog-like snout reports were only a small minority. So you'd think, well, you know, they're mistaken, they're very excited. It didn't usually, in the ones I can think of, didn't usually involve sort of Doberman-like ears. The ears were, as far as my impression was, weren't mentioned that much, just the snout. In the colonial era, there were reports where the creature was specifically called baboon or baboon-like. And of course, you can't go back in a time machine and quiz the witnesses, and sometimes the reports were fairly brief. So you think, well, they're talking about a baboon-like animal, and usually it didn't specify whether the baboon-like animal was on its hind legs or on all fours. So you think, well, but in some of these cases, most of these cases, these baboon-like creatures were reported from areas that had produced conventional Yowie reports, you know, the man ape or the various sizes, you know, but usually near man sized or even much bigger than man sized. Stanthorpe area. Paul Cropper interviewed an old guy there and his family, and this old fellow had seen a conventional shaped Yowie. Can you remember the guy's name? I just offhand can't.
I know who it is, yes.
Yeah. And his uncle had encountered a creature on the road in the fog, a Yowie-type creature. But this man's younger sister, I think it was in 1940.
That's right.
Yeah, she'd come running down back to the farmhouse one day because she'd gone up to play in her cubby house, a little shelter of sticks and what have you, and she came running back and said there was a man, an awful-looking man, sitting in the her cubby house, and she said he was covered with hair. And so they got a picture book of animals to show her, and she said that's what it was. The man looked just like that. And she was pointing at a picture of a baboon. So, she said it looked like a baboon and it was not huge. It was crouched down, sitting on its bum. But her brother, as we just said, had seen a conventional-looking yowie, and his uncle or brother had seen another conventional-looking yowie. So you'd think, well, the little girl was mistaken, you know. It was, we assumed what she'd seen was a juvenile yowie, and somehow or other she'd thought that it looked like the baboon in the picture. They're not that common in our files. I don't know. You have probably a lot more. I know you've got a lot more reports than us. We've got several hundred, but not that many. It's a minority where baboons are mentioned, and it's a minority where big yowies with snouts are mentioned. But I think it's got to the point, as you've said a few times in recent years, it got to the point where it'd be unfair to ignore the reports of the snouts. And so you think, well, how could some yowies have quite pronounced snouts, whereas almost all of the others have got flat faces?
They're seldom reported, but often enough to take notice of.
Yeah.
Now, we also had the woi-woi. Where Pablo had the...
Pablo, yeah. And hopefully you'll be showing the illustration. Yeah, that's right. There's a man who was driving and the damn thing was running right beside his car window, and he had the eye of an artist. And it wasn't over just like that. He had time to look at it. Definite dog-like face,
right,
on a man-like body. So, that was difficult to ignore. So what are you dealing with, you know? It would seem real stretch of the imagination to say that there are two different types of man-like creatures in Australia, and some of them have dog-like faces and some have ape-like faces.
The 2017... report from Logan Village that I think you interviewed the guy where it was in the...
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Well, you put me onto him. I just interviewed him for AYR. Yeah, and he was close up to that thing, and he turned his car around and had a look at it, and it was a big yowie-like critter, and he could gauge the height of it pretty exactly because it was... his head was skimming a high... Yeah. Metal sign, and it had been grubbing around in the gutter, in the ditch, when he first saw it, and he thought, is that a dog or something? And then he thought, that ain't no dog. It was on its haunches. Went and turned around, got it in his headlights, and stood up, and it had, you know, he saw it.
Glowing green eyes.
Green eyes, yeah, the green-eyed dog. Based.
But the attribute that he was describing was particularly about the elongated snout.
Yeah, he did mention it, and I thought, well, oh God, I don't know, you know. By that time, I think you'd spoken to me about various dog-like and, you know, made the point that, okay, if we're going to be honest investigators, we can't ignore the dog-like creatures.
But the question is it mistaken identity because it's a protruding jaw of a primate-looking creature, or is it actually a dog-like creature on two legs?
Yeah, well, I honestly don't know. I don't think there's enough data, really. I mean, I haven't read enough cases or interviewed enough. That guy you mentioned, he would be the one witness who I've spoken to in recent times who was so definite about it.
I spoke to a witness who, she had a 1995 report. In fact, there were two in the same area. When I say the same area, in fact, it was almost the same street as that same suburb was developed. Now, she came home at 2 o'clock in the morning. She was dropped off, and she had a short walk back to her home. Mm. Now, as she's walking home in the streetlights, she sees, and it's documented on AWARE, this creature, very tall, upright, and she said that the ears were like Doberman's ears, although Doberman-like, on each side.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes we have reports of ears on Yowies, and sometimes we don't.
Usually not, isn't it? Their ears are either not, people just don't notice them that much, or they say, well, they just plain weren't visible because of the hair.
Well, she used we sort of had a little bit of play with the images, and what we came up with together, myself and the witness, was the image of the Egyptian.
Oh, God, jackal face.
Well,
I don't know if Anuka is coming back. But
it's not in fashion.
But it is funny. I'm not right up on it, but I think aren't there investigators in the States and Canada who are talking about dog man or
been going on for a long time in the States? It's relatively new in Australia. Is it just a fad in Australia because of the American influence?
I don't know, but you know. But then again, you know, there were those reports of baboon-like animals in the colonial era here. Rarely, but every now and then, they'd say, well, there's some creature like a baboon terrifying people on the... but, you know, there are other irregularities sometimes in Yowie reports. You know, you get Yowie reports where... people say their ears, occasional reports where they say, oh, the ears were really pronounced. It had big sticking out ears. Well, I suppose some humans have big sticking out ears and most don't, but, you know, that detail in some reports, like old Clive Shepherdson in 1937, he said the ears were very pronounced. Well, apart from that, his description of the Yowie that he and his mate saw really close up in daylight at close range, other than the ears, it was, you know, it would be, you know, a pretty good average Yowie report description.
We are back for part two of Dogman Down Under.
With only 25 minutes to go.
Only 25 minutes to go in our proposed two-hour time slot, which we'll see how we stick with that.
Here's a picture I've got up on the screen there of Tony Healy. This is back in 19...
Oh, what a young'un.
Yeah, 1977 at Lochmora.
I love that. He's a red beard gentleman.
I know. Look at him. He's been doing it a long, long time. Both he and his co-conspirator here, one of my best friends, Paul Cropper. And, of course, they're authors of these books. Now, Paul and Tony first started collaborating in 1980. This book was produced in 1994, 1995. Out of the Shadows. Now, interestingly, these are collector's items now.
I was going to say, you're holding a piece of history no one can get their hands on right there.
Yeah. Well, these two are Australian cryptozoology icons, royalty, legends. They've done so much over the years. So this book here we found on eBay for over $300. They're really hard to come by. So we've got that one. That was their first book. And then the second one, I started to collaborate with them, and we produced the Yowie. That's that one there. You can still get these in production, and that's great. It's a glossary of right from the start of the 1800s onwards. As we're out of the shadows, you've got all the Australian cryptids, you've got the Thylacine, you've got basically everything that's been reported throughout our time. Then they wrote this book, Australian Poltergeist, and that's phenomenal. We were having a talk prior to this show about when they went up to Humpty Doo and they were investigating a poltergeist, essentially, and these rocks just started dropping out of the roof. Now, Paul being the skeptic that Paul is, for me, I thought That is, how good is that? That he's seeing something with his own eyes for once, and they're coming down right through the roof, but they're not making a hole in the roof, and they're witnessing the whole thing. This is why they were there. And they had reporters there and everything. It was happening in front of everybody. Stones were dropping through the roof, but not making any sort of marks or anything like that. How does that work? Stuff came through the wall, and it didn't make a hole in the wall, but they still came through.
Doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't. And I had a situation like this myself. It was probably about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And I'm driving in my car and I see this rock. Oh, when I say rock, it would have been about yay big. It was coming straight for me. And there's no one there to have thrown it, but it was coming straight for my windscreen. And okay, first of all, your mind's rock and rolling here going, you're wondering, how is it, why is it? And on that particular trajectory, it hits the windscreen, it comes through the windscreen, and also the rear vision mirror. This is a BMW X5. And it hits that, comes through the windscreen and through the bottom of the base of the rear vision mirror, and it lands in the back of the car, right? Incredible, absolutely incredible. The windscreen wasn't touched. And so when I hear this happen, and it does happen, and it can happen, I'm going, oh, then, I mean, I'm already asking, what was that?
Yeah.
But now it's sort of putting things in more context. It happens to somebody else. That was just incredible. I've never experienced anything like that before.
Surely you did something with that rock light. I would have made an amulet or something out of that.
I could not find it.
You're joking.
No. I searched high and it landed in the back. Bang, ching, ching, bang, 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 bang. First of all, the crack. I saw it go past my head, this far away from my face, and it went straight through, landed in the back, bounced around, ching, 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 ching.
So it had like a fair bit of velocity to it.
Oh, it was moving. Yeah. I cannot explain it. To this day, I cannot explain it. But then when Tony was sitting in my lounge room the other night, because he just spent the last week with me, and he was explaining that time at Humpty Doo, and all those stones coming through without making a mark, I'm going, ooh, I've got a story about that. I wonder how many people that happens to. Okay, so the latest book this year is The Yowie File. This is the latest, greatest, and the last of the trilogy. So if you haven't got your hands on it, get it now while they're still in stock. Amazing stuff in there. Really, really good stuff. I mean, they've dotted their I's, crossed their T's, and, yeah, a lot of work. We all work together on that. All right, so moving on, we'll get to our last audio file, and that's Pablo's at Woi Woi.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
And then after this, we'll have a chat about that, and then we'll get into some listener questions. So I've got about 10 or so kind of lined up, so we'll try to get through as many as we can. While this is playing, this is going to be your kind of last chance to ask questions, just because it's I'm a simple man, Dean, and when there's too much stuff kind of flashing on my screen, I can't deal with it. So get your questions in now, and we will answer those following suit.
Your wife's driving and she sees some kangaroos on the road. She's dropped her speed to about 50 or 60 kilometres an hour?
So probably 50, 60 kilometres at the most.
Now, the kangaroos are spread to both sides of the road. One goes to the left, and you think another one's come back out at that stage, or you're thinking at this moment that it is a kangaroo. As this thing's next to you, how far away from the side of the car was it from you?
I would say a metre and a half, 2 metres. I wouldn't say more than that.
Have you turned your head and looked at it directly?
Yes, yeah.
While it's running beside you at 50 kilometres an hour or 60 kilometres an hour, is it keeping pace with you? Is it keeping speed with you?
Yes.
The average human can only run about 30 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, no, yeah.
The record was set by Usain Bolt in 2009, and that was 44.7. Now we're talking faster than an Olympic sprinter.
Yeah, yeah.
keeping pace with your car.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You're observing ears on the right side of its head. They're not on top of the head like a kangaroo. It's on the right side of the head. And you mentioned that they're small and pointy.
Yeah. Pretty much like a human, but like, you know, like the size, but pointy, yeah. Very pointy, like what you would see on a drawing of a gnome or a fairy.
What height was this creature?
But I would say easily 2 meters, easily.
Easily 2 meters. Well, that's, you're saying easily at least 6.5 feet then.
Yeah, easily. I mean, anything from 2 to 3, I would say, you know.
Just quickly back onto the ears again. You're saying they're the same size as a human's ear, but it has a point at the top, so therefore it doesn't quite look like a human's ear?
Yeah, the shape is not human, no.
It was covered in hair?
Yeah, all over. The eyes felt small. Quite small, deep set, and really dark.
So you're saying that the eyes were deep set. Does that mean it had very pronounced eye ridges?
Fairly. I wouldn't say anything like, a Cro-Magnon skull or something like that, but yeah, it has a fairly pronounced ridge, brow ridge.
Pronounced snout. Can you talk to me more about that? I mean, how pronounced was it?
Compared to a normal human, maybe 5 centimeters forward. You know, comparing that, like, you know, if you think of the tip of the nose and the chin, add 5 centimeters forward.
So are we saying that that was more in terms of some sort of relic human? Or are we talking more like dog-shaped?
I felt that was more like dog-shaped. It was like a dog. You know, when the nose finishes, it just comes down straight to the chin. And this thing was like that. So it was pretty much a doggy-looking nose.
So basically a canine-type protruding mouth.
Yeah.
Yet the rest of the head looked more humanish.
Yes, but hairy, yeah.
Hairy.
And with pointy ears,
The nose is protruding, similar to a dog.
Yeah, pretty much like the drawing that they sent to you. That's why the feeling that I had was of a dog or a fox.
On two legs.
On two legs, yeah.
If that encounter there, Dean, doesn't make you question the reality of, like, does Dogman exist? There's probably not too many kind of encounters in Australia that would kind of push you any further than that, because this is a tremendous kind of encounter. You know, like, this person encountered this thing with his entire family, and it wasn't like a 2-second encounter. Like, this is something that he had quite a fair bit of, I would say, interaction with. He was so able to, like, recognize or understand the features. Like, he was able to reproduce this drawing himself. So I don't know if you find this, but I find, like, when people have these very traumatic encounters, like, they kind of imprint that moment in their mind almost forever. And it's obviously done this for this gentleman. Like, he's done this incredible rendition of it. Like, you can see the biceps, the triceps, even the forearm muscles. Like, he was able to fully, develop everything that he saw. Like, does this kind of make you question, like, did this guy see a dog man? Like, where does this kind of sit in that, the reality of this creature for you?
Well, firstly, you're right. I mean, encounters like this stay with you forever, as I say. There's no escaping it. And I've got some great examples of people who had encounters back in the 70s, but they still think about it every day.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think cases like this, when it is so discreet and he's so on the ball, so on the money in terms of articulating what he's seeing so affirmatively, you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been a few of those. I mean, just the last three audio clips that I put up, they're all affirmative towards the Dogman.
Yeah.
But these are modern day, right? And so, you know, like I say, things sort of happen in spates over time. But and also, like I said, the pendulum sways with America and the UK with what's happening over there. You know, they come on, they die off, they come on, they die off, and that's just the trend of it.
And there's also this trend with the Dogman, and we have not touched on this viewpoint at all, is that it is almost like this demonic entity.
Mm.
You know, I hear so many stories, especially in the US, that like they believe that this is almost like this demonic entity, that people who encounter this type of creature like feel like it's there to be a menace, to do evil, to be up to no good. When you know you hear encounters like with Yowies and Sasquatch, and it's kind of like wrong place, wrong time type of thing. And sometimes and I always say this, like Yowies and Sasquatch are kind of like just like people. You'll run into good people and you'll run into shitty people, and you'll run into happy people and you'll run into grumpy people, and it just depends on like what those circumstances are. Yes. Whatever happens in those situations. But whenever it comes to Dogman, it's not like this Dogman was so lovely for me and it kind of helped me out of the area. It's like, no, this Dogman like wanted to tear me to pieces, and I don't know how I'm alive.
Yeah, you look like that. You're built like that. You can't see anything other than menacing, right? Yeah, the last few reports that I put up, they're quite convincing. You hear that and you think, well, you know, there might be some weight to this. I mean, there probably is some weight to this. Well, there's some weight to this in their description, the way they're looking, and there's something to it, but we want to know more.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to these things. And it's essentially kind of been the anthem for this entire episode, is if you've seen something that you think is a Dogman, like, report it.
Report it. Get it documented. You have to get it documented. If it's not documented, it's lost forever. You know, we have to have it, just like all the old day reports that we have. Today will one day be an old day. So, you know, all these matter. So report them. Report them into us. And we're pretty much the only people that document them and have our files preserved.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And when you kind of document it with someone like yourself, it really removes the emotion from it. Because not to say that like any of these encounters aren't emotional or anything like that, because obviously they all are, but when you start to talk about it in a matter of fact kind of format, like it removes your self-beliefs, it removes the self-doubt. Like you're there, you're essentially, you're making like a pseudo police report, and it's all about the detail. It's not about how you felt. It's not about how this affected you for the rest of your life. This is, tell me what you saw. Tell me how it interacted. And tell me what this thing did.
Infinite details are so important. Because the little details that people tend to forget, that's just human nature. You'll be surprised how many of these little traits that they turn out to be so important in the future, when you're drawing analogies with other similar reports and or reports in the same area.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just want to really reinstate, like, tonight is not about deciding, hey, our personal opinions, like, does this thing exist or not? If we were to go on the record, I would say, like, I've spoken to enough people who believe they've had encounters with this, people who are very close to me, like people I would consider very dear friends, who have said, no, mate, I've seen this thing, flesh and blood, meters away from me. And I would say that person has nothing to gain from this.
How are those reports documented? Where are they saved? Where are they preserved?
Well, those are people who have kind of spoken to me just in confidence.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You've got to, yeah. It's got to be done properly as far as I'm concerned. Well, let me not say, leaves. They're talking about it, right? That's the first step of everything, of course. But I'm saying, at the end of the day, it's important to file that report. And so it is on record and it's going to help people. And this is what I stress. It's going to help people in later generations, if not now, but in later generations.
Absolutely. And that's the most important thing. And we are obviously repeating this because it is of the highest importance that if you think you've encountered something like this,
go on record.
Absolutely. Like, be anonymous, totally fine.
Or we can do an interview with you.
Yeah. But get it out there, because the thing is, like, this is essentially kind of like almost a new kind of phenomena in Australia.
It is.
And it's kind of like...
I believe it is.
Yeah, I genuinely would believe it is. Like, we look at the records that you kind of showed from yesteryear, like just 100 years ago, 150 years ago, and they aren't describing this.
Like, well, if we had Baboon Man back in the day, well, I think Baboon Man's almost gone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, does that raise, like, these really weird questions?
It comes down,
like,
to paranormal, really, does it? In some lanes, perhaps, because a lot of what these people are reporting shouldn't be so.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for me, I'm a believer that people are seeing something like this, whether it's a dog man or not. I can't, obviously, I can't say, yeah, that's exactly what it is. No one can. Like, that's ridiculous. That's like, right. If you're kind of sitting there saying, no, these people are definitely seeing dog man.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing an injustice to yourself. You're doing an injustice to that person. You're doing an injustice to anyone else in the future who has an encounter with something like this.
Yes, it's just inconsiderate mindset.
Absolutely. And it's too emotionally charged. It's too emotionally controlled, and it doesn't show, I guess, a level of, like, maturity.
Well, exactly right. I think the importance is, you know, just being level about everything and doing things down the right paths and listening to people's stories, listening to, you know, pros and cons, you know, taking everything on board, and then making your own informed opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because at the end of the day, like, we live in a very strange and unusual world with so many things that can't be explained. So don't feel like you're crazy for experiencing something, because it's probably quite the opposite, is that you potentially have this awakening moment in your life of, okay, now I'm going to see the world completely differently.
The things that happen out there in the Australian bush, and probably, you know, a lot of the continents around the world, you know, in some ways, it's quite disturbing. Like, as I've always said before, the indigenous people of most continents, most countries, they are fearful, even today, walking the forests alone at night. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I remember growing up, I grew up in, like, a
convent.
In an education system that was, like, very heavily influenced by, like, Aboriginal culture. And there is, like, just so much about that Aboriginal culture that exists, like, and I just kind of live within my day-to-day life now, that it just seems like it's all kind of second nature. But, you know, like, whistling in the bush, crying babies, and things like lights in the trees, like, you don't follow them, you don't go in there. It's, for me, it's just kind of like, that's rule number one.
That's a crying baby, that's now. We've been through that many times with many witnesses. Another interesting thing, Cade, is that if you look at the Aboriginal cave art, you won't find any dogmen in there.
That is interesting, isn't it? It's something that is completely lacking from Aboriginal lore in my area. Now, that's not to say maybe it exists elsewhere, and I don't speak for anyone else, but I can tell you that in the cultures that I've learnt, it's non-existent.
It's not mainstream anyway.
No, not at all.
It's nothing. We have, you know, Aboriginals from all over the country and have done so for decades now, talking to us and telling their own stories and stories from those still living in past. Not once does the dog man ever come up. Not once do I. I mean, I have so much cave art of the hours; it's plentiful.
Yeah,
I've got nothing in the dog man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's not even like kind of like this regional thing, like Quinkins are in northern Queensland, where I've had people come to me saying they've seen Quinkins nowhere else but in Queensland, and it's like this really fascinating thing. And if you don't know what the Quinkin is, like, jump on Google, give it a search, because it is incredible. It's super, super mind-blowing. But D-Mate, what do you reckon? We've got about 15 minutes left of our show tonight. Do you want to take some questions from the viewers and things like that?
Sure, that'd be great.
Excellent. So I've kind of spotted a couple that were rather good throughout the entire show. So thank you to everyone who's kind of got to them. I'm going to go through them. We may have potentially answered a couple of those while we've been just kind of discussing our things tonight. But yeah, it's let's get to it. So the first one, Chaser Odyssey asked me, what is it, Cade? Quinkins. Yeah, give it, just search Quinkins, Queensland, I guess.
Turramulli.
Yeah, it's you'll learn all about it. So
mainly the top end, and they're said to be extremely tall.
Yeah, like very tall, very thin.
Yeah,
live in the cracks of rocks and stuff like that.
So this, for example, this picture here that I've got on the front.
You regularly see him in Aboriginal art with the owls.
Yeah, so you got Percy Tresize, you've got the giant Quinkin there, or Turramulli, or this one's Turramulli, but they're essentially very, very similar things. But they come from the top end of the country.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm surprised that it's not like more of a thing, but, you know, each region has its own kind of beliefs and stuff like that, so I get it. So the first question comes from Jane, and she asks, has anyone ever taken foot plaster casts?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of Yowie casts out there.
I think more so she's referring, sorry, to the dog man.
Oh, dog man. Well, I mean, right, but how's that going to differ? We don't know. We don't have that information. How is that going to differ to, say, a Yowie, which has very human-looking footprints but of different proportions, most part? We don't know. I mean, we don't know what the difference between, say, if there is a dog man, what the difference in the feet are. I mean, if the body is the same human proportions as reported with the Yowie, except a lot larger, of course, we don't know the difference other than they have a different head, basically.
Yeah, it's rather interesting because I guess it all comes down to the representation of what you've seen for, like, werewolves, essentially, because werewolves, like, they kind of have that very high heel look to them whenever you see them in kind of popular culture, but I don't know if the reality of that translates well to a bipedal walking creature.
I think a lot of what you see there in art that you find on the internet, I think a lot of it is based on hogwash. It's just creativity.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, just to make it just look as scary as possible, but they don't actually look like that. And, you know, again, I still think that they are mistaken with Bigfoot and Yowie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that, you know, if there is such a creature that it is a man that morphs into a wolf on a full moon. You know, I think that is just Hollywood. That is fiction. That is a fairy tale.
I agree with you on that one. I think the notion that, like, werewolves are real is kind of ridiculous. Same with vampires and all that type of stuff. Anyway. we have another question from Tracy. Tracy Marshall, she says, Dean, do you think the Dogman could be another variety of Yowie or Sasquatch?
Yeah, possibly. But that would have to come down to genus as well. When I say it could be related, but that also detract from the whole dog thing, that it'd have to be some sort of fine line. But if I was going to muse myself on it, I would probably say more than likely, if there is a correlation, it would have to be a mutation of Yowie from interbreeding.
You know, I was going to say the same thing, because I would imagine Yowie populations would be rather small.
The world's a melting pot, like you said before. Australia would be a melting pot with all these different species and perhaps even genus. Trapped in Australia, and that's what they do. That's what they always did. It's scientifically proven that's what they did.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the fact that, like you said, like the that inbreeding is entirely a possibility because, like, what do you think? And this is very much putting you on the spot, but if you had to take a wild guess based on all the reports that you've taken, like, what would you think the Yowie population in Australia would be?
Oh, God, I get asked this. My response typically and generically is there's no shortage of them.
Yeah.
Because they're reported so plentifully and from all over the country and Western Australia, for gosh sakes, you know. I mean, this is the last place you'd expect, and in deserts, you know, northern New South Wales. You know, we think that they're confined to the Great Dividing Range and lush rainforests and deep valleys and so on, but they're not.
It's
Broken Hill, Mount Isa.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've had reports of Yowies on cattle stations in Mount Isa.
Exactly.
And it doesn't make sense. Like, that is incredibly remote. It's incredibly flat.
But then again, you look at humans, wild humans won't live there either. But they do.
Yeah.
And they do travel through there. Might not live there, but maybe they're just travelling through.
Yeah, maybe. But maybe.
On the most part, home's home, as I always say. Where they have their homes, they might wander, but they generally always come back.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as, as far as where they live and so on, yeah, it could be anywhere in the country. They pop up in the most unusual places and even like semi-suburbia, sort of like on the fringes of human inhabitants and getting into people's backyards, little bushland corridors, little bushland creeks, suburban creeks that are covered by bushland to get from one place to the other.
Yeah, wow.
There's still little corridors all the way through that they can still traverse without being seen. And like I said in the intro of my last video, they get away with a lot because they're in human form in most part.
Yeah.
And they travel in the
dead of night. It's just a hiker or something.
Dead of night.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think any different.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there's some weirdo walking through the bush.
Yeah.
Don't go near him. Like, you don't know who that is.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
At distance, yeah.
Yep. We kind of covered this question, but this comes from Jane. She asks, what do the elders say about them? Not much.
About the dog, man, nothing.
Nothing.
No. Yeah. No, look, you know, the amount of conversations I've had with elders and tribal people from all over the country and different parts of the world too, they only talk about the hairy man in terms and the reference of what we know is like a hominid.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this kind of like two variations of it. Like, I haven't ever heard of a third variation of like a hominid. You know, there's the Yowie and the Jundjiti.
Yeah, well, so the large ones and the small ones. But there are variations, say, for example, and look, there are so many, because people say more human-like face, more ape-like face, massive proportions and muscularity. This one was a bit spindly.
Yeah.
You know, and all that sort of jazz. So there are sort of variations, but in all, they're sort of pointing in the same direction. But this is where I say the different genus that's been trapped here.
Yeah. And I'm going to just piggyback this question here because you kind of started lending to it, is Maggie asks, Dean and Cade accounts, or what do you think accounts for the changes in appearance of these reports? And I don't know if she's like kind of meaning historically.
Well, look, even in today's reports, you'll still get variations. I mean, look, the main bulk of the reports are all the same. They are. And they all point in the same direction. But you will get variations. It's not just saying in height. Like we were just saying before, in appearance as well. And some longer hair than others. And then, you know, I mean, there's other aspects that we're still grappling with, and that's like the self-illuminating eyes. And we can understand how their eyes can see better than ours in the dark. And with the Neanderthals, for example, apparently their night vision was exceptional.
Really?
Their eyes were so... apparently... Homo sapiens' eyes are some of the worst in the whole lineage. because they had such large eyes. They're so sensitive, they're sunken right back with these big eye ridges to protect them from this light. And they had huge cones and rods. And also there's a part of the brain right here that's got to do with receiving the messages and signals from the eyes. And it's so much larger than a human. So therefore, their night vision is great. So this, for example, when I was chased on these other occasions and the one that hit me, running through that terrain, he should have been tripping over it when just trying to walk. This thing's sprinting through.
Yeah, right. So they're just like potentially, how would I say this, processing all that information just so much better.
That's it. Basically, that's essentially what it means. And they also, like I always say, you know, they are so aware of our night blindness.
Yeah.
Have you ever been camping or out with a group of people at night time and, you know, you're all walking around doing the tracks and you just sort of step back in the bush next to a tree, everyone just walks past you, but you're there.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
How many times do you think that's been happening with these things?
Exactly. Exactly. So to kind of take it back to the dogman side of things for this question, I think popular culture is a massive, like, I cannot ever, like, over explain how much popular culture or just the zeitgeist in general influences people's recollection or understanding of things that they see.
Well, you know, two people can see or witness exactly the same thing, but they process it differently. Now, back onto one of my first questions at the beginning of the show, who's yay and who's nay? So put up your vote there. Are you pro dogman being a real thing in Australia, or are you against it?
Yeah, that's a.
We've got 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So just cast your votes in because it's interesting to us to see what the popular consensus is.
Yeah, absolutely. We have time for a couple more questions and then we'll quickly go through. So the last couple of minutes, just put yay or nay for your believe of I guess your do you believe in the dog man in Australia?
And remember, I'm not nay or yay, but I sort of sway towards the negative a little bit. But with some of the new reports that are coming through, they can't be ignored. So, again, it comes down to documentation, building a case.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the questions in here we've kind of answered, and they're kind of a double up. So I do just have to quickly go through that one there. We've answered that one. Do you think it's possible that stories from Europeans, I almost said UFOs, from Europeans misidentifying animals made it into Aboriginal law? Now, this person wasn't actually asking us. They were actually asking this individual by the name of Kit Kat who was watching the live stream. And you don't know this, but she kind of said in the chat that she was a... she's from Aboriginal descent. Said none of this exists in the... like in the folklore,
right?
Which was interesting because that's like another.
We were having that conversation before, yeah.
Yeah, of that, but I don't think like European settlement at all could influence like Aboriginal law at all because Aboriginal law has kind of been there for forever. European settlement hasn't been, like, European influence hasn't been around long enough to kind of influence that, in my opinion.
What was the influence about, though?
Misidentifying animals.
Oh.
Yeah, so like dogman and things like that. I don't think so. Okay, we do have something here from Shane. Shane, very good supporter of the show, always chimes in all the time.
I think I know Shane.
Yeah. He's asked about portals.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I don't.
But maybe.
But I do get reports of them. Yes,
I hear it all the time.
Yeah. Just the facts, man. Just the facts. Now, I don't know.
Portals are facts when they're told to you from witness accounts.
Yeah, I know. But you know, generally, the reports I get, they're just sort of right down the line. But it's just an uncomfortable sort of conversation in a lot of ways. When you, I don't know. I battle with it a little bit. We just don't know enough. I think that's what it comes down to. We don't have the information. you know, the whole UFO influence, of course. Now,
absolutely.
This is what you know, I'm frequently asked, and I don't have all the answers. And really, it's assumption in a lot of ways, and I don't like to assume. I just like to get just build the cases and work from there.
Well, you know what they say, if you assume, you make an ass out of you and me.
There you go.
So I'm very much the same. And I think it's really important for people out there to go, it's okay to say, like, I don't know. I'm not educated enough about that to answer that question or have a valuable opinion.
Otherwise, you're doing a disservice, particularly if you're in a position to, you know, where people are asking you for advice or an informed decision or opinion. It is very important, I think. I think it's paramount to say, look, you know, honestly, I don't know. I don't have enough information there.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's like what Tony was saying before about the Dogman. He was saying pretty much the same thing, that you know, we don't have enough data yet to form any sort of decision on whether it's something.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a really good way to kind of end the listener questions. I think that's a cool way to kind of go about it. So one final thing before we kind of wrap up here is asking people if they –
yes,
they believed in the dog man.
There we go.
So let's go back.
Just
here.
A yes or no. That's all we know. Just a yay or no.
So again, a yay, a no, yay, no, yes, no.
Well, it's 50-50.
It's pretty 50-50. I like that. I like that.
It's balanced. Yeah,
yeah, because I think it shows that these could be potentially misidentifications.
Some are, I'm sure.
Some are. I would have absolutely no doubt about it. It also shows that it could just be something else too. Or it could be a genuine dogman who knows? You know, the person, whoever has the encounter is the one who would have more information than anyone else. It always just comes down to their interpretation of it. So, this was really, really...
it's a good show.
Really fun. Someone has asked, Dean, what's the story behind the sunburn, mate? It's not... It's actually not sunburn.
It's the camera.
Well, the camera is when they go into the little feed to go onto the internet.
I did actually mention that to Kay prior to the show.
Dean actually is like very just normal looking. Because if I put the camera on me, I'm very red too. And I'm so white, I'm almost transparent.
I really had to wear my sunglasses just sitting here.
Yeah, like these lights are bouncing back into Dean's face. And he's like, he's just... Maybe that's what you actually are, sunburnt from the light reflecting off me onto you.
I've mentioned this before. Before the show, I mentioned this to Kate. I said, I look sunburnt, and they were my words.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I even tweaked all the cameras. When you see the polished version of this, they'll see the real colors, and we will look just like normal people.
I just got back from Tahiti.
Yeah, absolutely. So to anyone who was asking, like, why are these dudes so red, that is...
Just embarrassed.
Yeah, we're just shy guys. But look, guys, that's pretty much it for tonight. So a lot more people are kind of chiming in with no's on the dog man. So yeah, it's it's pretty 50-50. I think that's really interesting to kind of do a show about dogmen in Australia. I'd be interested to see if those opinions are the same of, like, do you believe the dogman is stories in the US and in Europe and around the rest of the world? But, you know, that's potentially for another night. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a fantastic 2 hours. Dean, thank you so much for making the trip up to Cairns. It's always a pleasure to hang out with you. Our night's kind of just beginning.
Well, we'll go to the after party later. I'm going to get a face tattoo, and I have a tiger, a live tiger, being put in my room right now.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way that you can do it when when you're in Cairns. But thank you so much for everyone who's joined us tonight. Thank you for all the positive and negative comments. It all helps because it adds all to the discussion. Because you know, there's two sides to every coin, and I genuinely do love hearing both points of view when it comes to it.
It's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you to everyone who's joined us tonight. It's been a real pleasure. Guys, if you obviously haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do. It would be a supreme help to the podcast. So season 19 will be dropping in 2 weeks. So if you are interested in that, head on over and subscribe. Obviously, we're doing a lot more video when it comes to the podcast. This is going to be released as a mega episode on the main feed. So if you like this, you'll hang around and I'll do a much more polished version and we'll get this looking really smick, because we're fairly limited to what we can do in the live stream when we haven't got any producers here or not. You've probably noticed I'm over here pressing buttons like a madman throughout the whole lot.
I'm sitting over here looking sunburnt.
Yeah, that's it. But guys, thank you so much. Be sure to like my page. Be sure to like the Australian Yowie Research page. Head on over and subscribe. It has been an absolute pleasure hanging out with you tonight. I've been Cade. You've been listening to the Believe Podcast. That's Dean Harrison. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.